Yo, yo, welcome to Crypto 101. This is your host, Matthew Aaron. And I'm very excited for this coming 2 weeks because this is the start of a collaboration between Mr. Michael Shonai and his Evolvement podcast and myself and Crypto 101. And these conversations you hear for the next couple weeks all came from New York Blockchain Week. This was Fluidity, Ethereal, and Consensus. For people who are not part of the Crypto 101 Facebook community, I had vlogs on there talking about what it's like to be at the event. And my advice to everyone is don't pay for the ticket for Ethereal. They're like $500. Don't pay for the tickets for Consensus. They're like $1,000. But go to New York Blockchain Week. Go to the parties, go to the meetups, go to the events, and go to the venues. Stand outside them or stand in the lobbies of the hotels and meet all of the people walking in and walking out of the venue. Most people come there not because they just want to get something done, go on stage and have a speech. They're there to enjoy the whole week talking about cryptocurrency, blockchain, and just trying to find new ideas. So if you ever thought about going to New York and thought you can't afford it because the tickets are too expensive, don't buy the tickets, but definitely go. Get an Airbnb, stay with a friend, and enjoy that week. The conversations coming up these 2 weeks from the collaboration between Michael and myself are going to start with today's Nanome. Nanome is a company that is designing chemicals, molecules in virtual reality and putting those changes on the blockchain so they can see who owns those changes. Other conversations coming up these next couple of weeks, Unification, Jameson Lopp, the CEO of IDEX, Da Hongfei of NIO, NextChange, and Nicholas Merton from DataDash. I'm excited to get these out to you. But before we get into that conversation, remember, wherever you're listening to this podcast, smash the subscribe button, leave us a good rating and a comment. It helps us stay visible. Don't forget to follow Crypto 101's Twitter at Crypto 101 Pod and my own personal Twitter at Matthew Aaron 101. Remember, this is not trading advice, legal advice, investment advice, and not personal advice. And I am excited to get into this conversation. Enjoy, and we'll see you after the show. Yo, yo, welcome to a Crypto 101 Evolvement podcast collaboration with Mr. Michael Nye. And we have Mr. Steve McCloskey, CEO of Nanome, here with us. Cool. Chilling. What's up, dude?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. What we want to do is we want to talk about your amazing company. Look, we just put on the VR. I don't know if anybody else saw this, but we put on the VR. We went live with it, and you built a platform, a room, a space where you can take chemicals. We're playing with insulin and hemoglobin and stuff like that. I don't even know what we're talking about. Manipulating it with our hands, making it bigger, smaller, adding bits and pieces to it to create new chemicals, new insulin strains. It was just amazing, all in VR. And I even had a watch on my wrist so I didn't miss my meeting.
Yeah, yeah. Now you're a scientist, right? Like, you know, how many people are designing chemicals nowadays?
Nye felt smart, bro.
I mean, you guys could do it. Like, I don't think there's anything limiting you. Like, you got the processing. You can see it in 3D. Like, you could actually do it.
I was creating molecules and proteins that have never been created before. So I think that's pretty smart, Matt.
That's true.
I agree. Before we get into everything your company's doing, VR, blockchain, NFT tokenizing, and all kinds of different things all in blockchain and VR, tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a nano engineer. Went to UC San Diego, originally grew up in LA, and was actually from North Hollywood. And I was always into science as a kid, kept that going through college, was always into video games as a kid, tried to keep that going through college, and ended up doing more like computer graphics for video games, but like for nanoengineering. And so when you look at like manipulating molecules and atoms and proteins, that is like nanoengineering. And so I wanted better computer graphics, started working on that. And now it's kind of like just a combination of all these cool fields I'm interested in with business models behind it. Yeah, so just trying to keep doing cool stuff and get better tech and medicine for the world.
Where'd you get the background to build something like that? Did you hire a team, or you are actually sitting there coding, working away on this? I guess, what is your background that made this possible?
Yeah, well, so I had taken some like computational nanoengineering classes where if you look at that, when you built the molecules and how you added the chemical group and then like it kind of shifted and like changed the structure.
Yeah.
So I did some programming and that type of stuff, like molecular force fields. But then in terms of like computer graphics, I started actually taking classes at UC San Diego, just auditing them, because I wasn't computer science, I was nanoengineering. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to build like the first prototypes of the platform, got that online. That attracted some good co-founders that joined the company with me. And then we all started building this together. together. So nowadays, yeah, I'm not so much on the programming side because there's really great people in computer science like graphics that you need to optimize this and have a really clean code base. Mm-hmm. And so we have a really great development team that's working on this.
And what is the goal of the company? Is it to build all of these different VR systems? Is it specifically for what we just tested in the medical field? Like what's the overall vision with what you guys are creating?
Yeah, there's a lot of companies out there that like will create a lot of different applications and just kind of get contracts to make different things. We just create one main application, anything made out of atoms. That's our goal. So nanoengineering is things that are basically between the size of a single atom and a virus. Yeah, 1 to 100 nanometers is the area that we look at. And what's interesting there is that's when it goes from like, quantum mechanics and like wave particle duality and like, what is reality? Like what's going on at that scale versus, if I hit a wall, like my hand is not going to go through the wall ever. And that's like very classical. And so that transition between this like, quantum world and this classical world, that all happens at around 10 nanometers, give or take. But really between 1 and 100 nanometers is a safe range to say that. That's when quantum goes classic.
Mm-hmm. So when you have in this quantum state, do you think that VR is going to be able to make us understand that a lot better just by interacting with it, like how everything reacts? I mean, or is it just going to be something that we have to conceive first, make a program, and then basically interact with our interpretation of the quantum realm? Or do you think that we're going to be able to actually physically interact with the quantum realm because of VR?
I think it gets interesting in a few ways. So just like understanding quantum mechanics, like you need a pretty good background in mathematics. So one of the first apps that we built back in the day is called CalcFlow, and that one's a 3D graphing calculator for vector calculus. Mm-hmm. And so that like could help you out with the foundations of the mathematics that you would need to understand like quantum theory a bit more. But in terms of like enhancing our understanding of like how molecules work, I think that hooking up quantum computers to simulate the molecular interactions is good. Like that's the holy grail, because then you like you're not simulating it on a computer that's classical and just trying to like get close. You're doing real quantum computing on real quantum systems. And so you should have like 100% accuracy.
What's the difference between a traditional computer and quantum computer in terms of interacting on the quantum realm or quantum level? So you're interacting with molecules right now on your laptop. That's dope. But why would it be different on a quantum computer and how?
Yeah. So when you added the chemical group and it did the energy minimization simulation, that was all classical. So we use like a modified Lennard-Jones potential, which is, So you know gravity, things are attractive.
Yes.
So this one, they're attractive and repulsive at a certain distance.
Okay.
And so like if it's far enough away, it'll start getting closer. And if it gets too close, it'll really push it away further. And that's just like a classical simulation.
So is it always moving or does it find an equilibrium?
It'll find an equilibrium, but everything just keeps moving. Like everything kind of vibrates and oscillates and everything's just kind of moving. But it'll kind of be sitting in that bottom potential well and just kind of moving around. And like that's the steady state. Mm-hmm. But trying to find that state that it's called a global energy minimum, that's really hard to find. But a quantum computer could find that like instantly.
Right.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about like some super long simulation on like a supercomputer. It's like a quantum computer just like gives you exactly what you want.
Very interesting.
In theory. In theory. Yeah, like I mean, right now, the best thing is probably the 2048 qubit quantum annealer system from D-Wave.
Okay.
But I'm still waiting for some good papers to come out that show like, real uses, basically stuff that we're doing. But, the people writing the quantum code for the molecular simulations using D-Wave, I haven't really seen much come out of that. But it's definitely, the future.
So this is a blockchain show. We're talking about crypto. We're talking about cryptocurrency. We talked about manipulating molecules and chemicals in VR, and now we're at quantum computing. What does this have to do with blockchain?
Yeah. So it's all going to come back to that molecule that that you made a little bit earlier. And so that molecule that you made, you said earlier, you made something that nobody else has ever made. So how do we capture that? How do we make sure that people know that you are the original creator of that?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, we have this like matrix first to hash application where you go online, you upload your file, generate a hash, you store that hash on the blockchain. And so now that's permanently tied from your address and it shows that your address put that hash on the blockchain. And so if you're the first to hash, it's like you're the first inventor, the first creator of that molecule.
So when somebody comes in and starts manipulating that molecule too, say now I made that molecule and I'm like, dude, that's dope. And I pop on VR and I start adding to it and manipulating it, you're going to see the chain of creation.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to encourage the collaboration. But a big part of collaboration, like if you get your work ripped off, like that sucks. Nobody wants to get their work ripped off. But if you track it and you're able to see, who's taking what work and who's modifying it, who's making it better, you could encourage that collaborative process. And that's how things get done, is people working together.
Super interesting. I mean, this kind of leads into a whole other realm of what VR is like potentially, and I believe like will be used for in the future. You know, right now, like the majority of the masses are using it for games. You know, Madden, we fuck around with it a little bit and play zombies, you know, and shoot some zombies around, or we have hangouts in VR and things like that.
Which he always says he kills more zombies than me. I don't think so. We need it on the blockchain, to be honest with you.
I am definitely the best zombie killer in this room. Not a question.
It's not immutable, though.
Exactly.
How do you think this is all going to be used education-wise in the future? Do you think this is like going to be spread through colleges, high schools, and things like that, where people are learning unique and delicate skills like through VR?
100%, man. Dude, we're so popular in Australia, oddly enough. Like, so New South Wales, Australia, they have like, I don't know, 400 headsets. Like,
word?
They're doing their end of the semester, end of the quarter, like finals in VR right now, like showing off all the proteins and chemicals that they were working on. Like, this is like being used today. I just got a Facebook message saying that they're going to get like 60 Oculus Quests, and they want to basically get their entire chemistry department in VR and teach all like the chemistry labs in VR. So it's like, it's the future, it's the present, like it's happening. These things are really awesome, and you know, it's being commoditized even more, where you don't need the computer, you don't need the wires, like just have the headset, $400. Like, I think that's very affordable for schools to get like hundreds of these.
And yeah, exactly, $400. Like, so I don't know if anybody, whoever's listening or watching in live, if they even can hear me over there, an Oculus Go is $200. An Oculus Quest is $400. That is super affordable for even the average person to go in there and start maybe learning. You know what I really like is online courses like Coursera, or, you know, like a Code Academy. You know, you can go there for free. And like I learned, you know, JavaScript from Code Academy, HTML, CSS. And of course, and then I did a lot of courses from, you know, like either, even Harvard, MIT, and University of Chicago in Coursera. And it's so good. You know, these courses are so good. You have access to these amazing professors. Just imagine the accessibility you're going to have when you have this on your face, and you're able to sit in classrooms and manipulate chemicals and molecules, and, you know, even trade car engines, brakes, airline or airplane mechanics and things like that. Dude, it's accessible now.
And even that, like, I think there's still some major, major misconceptions. You know, every person that I talk to who, not every person, but a large majority of the people that I talk to who haven't experienced VR still think a few things. First, they think VR is way too expensive. They don't even realize you can get an Oculus Go for $200. And if you want to get something cheaper, you can get the little box ones. You can put your phones in it. I've never really messed with those, so I can't say how.
I did. They're kind of lame.
Yeah, I bet they're okay.
I bet they're kind of lame.
They're pretty lame. Dude, it's a cardboard box in your face, bro.
I bet so. But it's still a step in the right direction, right? So people, like, I was talking to my friend, he still thought the Goes and all those things were $1,000-$1,500, and that's just not true anymore. And besides that, a lot of people who haven't experienced it are bearish on it because they haven't really stepped into the experience. I know when I introduced Matt to it, and when I was introduced to it and I put it on for the first time, it was literally like stepping into a whole different world.
So I didn't tell you. So I met up with my friend just yesterday. That's why I left all the parties. And so we met up at the bar down there, and we're talking. Mm-hmm. I was telling him about doing our meetups in VR. Like we said offline, we do meetups in VR. We get crypto guys over there, and we just rap out, you know, put stuff on the board, PPTs, PowerPoints, you know, and just, you know, talk about cryptocurrency and blockchain and stuff like that. And I was like, yo, you don't get it until you come. So we came over here. He put on the Go, and he's just like, he's blown away. And it's the $200 machine that's hooked up to your eyeballs with one little clicker.
What are some of these barriers that you see to actually getting this technology adopted into more of the mainstream? And how do you think we can overcome those kind of things?
Yeah, well, I think back in 2016, we saw a pretty big like VR wave, a lot of hype. So I think that was a little bit early because it was all desktop-based VR, laptop-based VR. You had to like plug in, and it was kind of expensive. So to get you started, it was really like, I don't know, $1,500, $2,000 back then. But then the Go came out, you know, like last year. Like, that was pretty dope.
It's only been out for a year?
Headset. I think it came out at F8 last year in like May.
Okay.
Was that the very first one without all the wires connected to computers?
It was the first like super popular one,
right?
Okay. Yeah. And so like now we're gonna have the Quest, and so like the Quest is pretty much like the same desktop thing. You got the controllers in there. You have like a pretty nice high resolution headset, good graphics, and then they're releasing it with a bunch of really great games. And so like, you know, newcomers into VR that are just experiencing this, they have a lot of really high quality content, high quality hardware. And so I think 2019, like, yeah, the piece is already set up, and I think we just need to keep talking about it and be like, hey, like, VR is here. It's good stuff. People are using it. Like, if there's people that deny it, just put the headset on them and you'll let them play with it. I think that that's the best way to convince somebody that, like, VR is awesome and real, is just let them try it out.
You killed it when you said, like, you know, I want to pick up 60 quests. You already got in, like, you said Wales.
Yeah, in New South Wales.
New South Wales,
yeah,
okay. In Australia. And then this is already adopted. What other markets are you in right now? How are other people using it? And where are you trying to go?
Yeah, I mean, our biggest market, our biggest focus really is the pharmaceutical industry right now. Yeah, we get reach out from, you know, chemical manufacturers that are, you know, interested in using the product as well.
Right.
But the big thing is we want to, you know, help the medical industry get these medicines to market faster. And so that's going to help save people's lives. It's going to improve their quality of life. And so that's our first market that we're focusing on. And we get to work with these researchers mm-hmm. that are, you know, crystallizing protein structures, solving them, analyzing them, and developing drugs for that. And so that's really awesome. We just published a paper with Novartis GNF. So that's the Genomics Institute of the Novartis Research Foundation. Just down in San Diego where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
And really great people. You know, they talk about how they're using it for, you know, structure-based drug design. And they're analyzing the proteins, designing new molecules. And so we're in a lot more of these top pharma companies as well, getting into the smaller biotechs, but we distribute online, and that's where a lot of the universities find us.
I think we have to go check out this company, by the way. What is it? Novartis?
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 Yeah.
It's in San Diego, you said.
Novartis is global, but okay. Yeah, GNF San Diego is the one that sounds published great. The paper. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Now, kind of moving into the crypto side of things, what's your opinion on how cryptocurrency will play a role in VR and vice versa?
Yeah. So I used to play World of Warcraft back in the day.
Why does everybody in crypto say that shit?
Because we had digital currency, we had auction house, we had peer-to-peer trading, we had scammers. Like mm-hmm. It's just like there's so many parallels between World of Warcraft gold and modern day cryptocurrency. And so, you know, I think that we're going to have a lot of applications that kind of mirror that. And instead of having like a centralized gold repository that the company is selling, they just put that on the blockchain, and you know, now they could track everything and a lot of these peer-to-peer trades to be more efficient and more secure. And then you have your ideas like the NFTs you mentioned. So it's not just CryptoKitties with the ERC-721s where you just have like one unique asset. There's Engine who made the 1155 ERC standard. And so with that, you can make like 500 swords, and then there's like a limited supply of only 500. And then if those are distributed in game, they might increase or decrease in value depending on the in-game economics.
Right.
So I think that that's a big, you know, part of the industry. Like you're just going to have these like tokenized digital economies, and it's going to mirror the real world a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
On our end, I really love the creative aspect. You know, create a new video game character, create a new piece of code, create a new chemical. It's like that's what I care about in crypto right now. I mean, I like a lot of the parts in the industry, but that's like the one challenge that we're tackling. How do we track the things that people create, give them the proper attribution, crowdsource things, give them the proper rewards, and encourage people to work together and create better things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I see blockchain helping out in our respect is like design applications.
I swear World of Warcraft and poker is the two things I hear most about people coming into the crypto space. Like that's just...
It was a fun game, man.
I have never played it. I mean,
man, what did you do with your childhood?
I watched Star Trek.
So did Star Trek get you into crypto, or you're like, oh man, this future space society, they don't have cash, right?
No, Star Trek didn't get me into crypto, but I just maybe like really love tech in the future. You know, it's just like I personally believe that we can have better lives and just like more experiences through technology. It's just inspiring to think about these different things. And I kind of realized for myself, I can wait for people to do it, or I can be part of that and help shift and guide the whole path of how I think tech will play a part in the future. And I think that's kind of what you're doing. It's like you see this technology and you're like, I know how the future looks from my eyes or my VR goggles.
Yeah, well, we all saw the replicator in Star Trek, right? Yeah, you just kind of 3D print, materialize anything you want. So like, I want to create the files for that. Yeah, and those files like seemingly would have atomic precision. And so it's not really like a five-year goal, like when it keep making
blown.
Molecules.
Stop. Hold it. Just wait a second. My mind just got blown there. You just filled in the keys. I was like, how does the replicator know what to do?
Yeah, how does it know what to do, right? Like, you know, it's got to have some sort of a file structure that's like keeping track of all the atoms. And so we really do that at a very small scale. It's not like you could have some atomically precise like water bottle or something like that yet. Actually, you probably could. It depends on how you do it. But
it'll take a lot of time, a lot of...
You kind of need like nested layers where, you know, the base layer, you have the atomic coordinates and you have like the chemical structures. And then like a bit above that, you have bulk property of the material.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have that bulk property of the material that has basically like think about an algorithm for placing bricks or something.
Right.
You know, and then once you know that the building is made out of bricks, you could just define the geometry of the building and then just let the bricks fill themselves. So that's more so how I see that going in the future. But I mean, right now, just getting these baseline files that are atomically accurate, mm-hmm. I think that's the first step. And you know, we're helping multiple industries, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, you know, material science and materials industry is also huge. And so, you know, really target those, get the university college kids hooked on it. Mm-hmm. And let them take part in that system. And then in the future, I think that the 2100 version of Nanome making files for the replicator, and hopefully somebody has a replicator by then.
That's awesome.
I mean, even going back to the World of Warcraft example, I know like you may not relate to it, but imagine.
Did you play that?
I did for a little while. Right. I was like 16 or something like that. I was like a level 28 or something, bro.
I don't even know what that means.
That wasn't bad.
It's not bad. Yeah.
What's the highest level?
I mean, back in the day, it was 60. Yeah. There's still World of Warcraft. I played 60, a little bit of Endgame there, and then I played the expansion that went to 70, and then a little bit of Endgame, and then stopped.
Right, so you're like one up.
He's the best.
Yeah. Okay. Level supreme nerd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now there's like level 110. I mean, I stopped playing that like 10 years ago. Back when level 70 was the highest.
Yeah. Yeah, well, even thinking about that, right? I like that example because I never really thought of it like that. It really, World of Warcraft was this whole unique world. You could buy and sell all these unique goods within it with the World of Warcraft currency, the gold. You could communicate with people peer-to-peer. You could trade with people peer-to-peer, all of those different things. Now, imagine we are utilizing that with something like Decentraland. Mm. You know, where it's connected to the blockchain, it's immutable. We have all of these capacities to integrate virtual reality. We're literally talking about an entire different world, and I don't think people really understand the gravity of how big something like that could be.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not just going to be Decentraland. They're doing some really cool stuff with the land parcel on the blockchain. Or now you can own a piece of land essentially in a video game. That's super awesome. There's a million other companies working on this aspect of these digital economies and gamification aspects. So I'm just excited to see everyone take their own part and do something cool with it.
One of the biggest things in cryptocurrency space and digital asset space is that people don't have a monetization plan. They kind of raise their ICO tokens and they just go, hey, we're going to build things off of this. And then they're like, oh, we'll figure out how to make money. I don't know if you did an ICO, but what was your fundraise? How did you start developing this? And how do you plan to monetize and make revenue?
So we kind of have a very traditional model and a very untraditional model. So the traditional model is we make software, we sell it on an annual basis. So you pay for annual subscription. Mm-hmm. We sell it to pharma, universities, average gamer, consumer type people. We also have
a free version. If I ask how much that is?
So the prices on the website is I think it's discounted $200 per year right now for universities and people like that.
$200 per year per person?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's affordable.
Yeah, it's affordable. I mean, put that together.
I can hook that up.
$400 headset plus a $200 per year program. This is very high quality stuff that's very affordable.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the traditional model. Pharma, we charge a bit more, but they have private infrastructure and other
obviously,
things
yeah.
that we need to deal with that make it more of an overhead cost.
The expansion pack.
Yeah, the expansion pack, the private server deployment, all that fun stuff. So that's the traditional model. Yeah, it keeps the lights on, keeps the company going. And then we get to do cool stuff in the crypto world. The eventual goal of the crypto platform isn't just you make a chemical and you make it better. It's ownership of that.
Right.
So who owns the intellectual property of that chemical? Is it one person? Is it many people? You know, that really goes into the securities aspect of all this, because if you take an item and tie it to a contract and say that there's different people that own it, then that definitely goes into SEC securities type stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to see that field evolve. And whenever the regulations are ready, we're going to be securitizing the chemicals that people create and trying to distribute the ownership.
Right.
And so I think that's going to be really cool, because then if we crowdfund and crowdsource a different project, then we could even take ownership of these chemicals. Or one of the models that's been proposed is we also have a free version. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't want to pay $200 a year and you're using the free version, we might in the future be adding 5% type of tax. If you use the free version, create something, we get 5% royalties.
A little bit of control of the IP or something the copyright of whatever you're creating.
Yeah, not 100%, but just, it's pretty common, Unreal Engine, free, you make a video game, they charge 5%. So if you make $100 on a video game, you send $5 to Unreal Engine.
That's really smart. I like that.
Makes sense.
I like that. Mr. Michael, now do you have anything else to say?
No, man. I'm just really excited about the potential of all this. We both have the Oculus Go. I've been playing around with it for...
Man, my Quest is coming next week.
Oh, sweet. I know. Yeah, me too.
You lucky, man.
Oh, yeah? You pre-ordered?
Yeah.
Man, dude, get on it.
I got to. I'm going to be traveling in Europe for a month, though, so...
Oh, boo-hoo.
It's not going to come to me for a while. But, man, I thank you for coming on, man. I think this is, like, really, really cool. It's a whole other world having the two controllers and all these other buttons that you have on that thing and seeing what you guys have built is really cool. So that's all I really got to add to it.
Before we get off, though, please tell everybody how to find you if they want to know more.
Yeah. So you go to our website. We're at nanome.ai. That's nanome, like genome. And just feel free to download the free version. We don't charge anything for that. No percentage of your intellectual property right now. Just check it out. Have fun with it. Yeah, feel free to reach out to me. Meet up in VR. My gamer tag on our application is just Steve Nano. So... if you see me creating rooms over there, pop into my room and say hi.
And on the same thing, why don't you pop into our VR meetups too when we have them? We'll keep a touch, look at his Twitter or my Twitter. We put the links up there, and we'd love to go into VR and to alt space and talk crypto.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. That sounds really fun.
All right. All right, Steve, Mike.
Peace.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Crypto 101. In our next episode from this series and the collaboration between Crypto 101 and Michael Shil Nye's Evolvement Podcast, we have Nima from the Unification Foundation. All these episodes are going to be released on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Before we get off, I want to say thank you to Randy for editing this episode, and a quick shout out to the Crypto 101 bloggers who are writing on Medium at least 3 to 4 times a week. So check out the Crypto 101 blog on Medium. We'll see you Wednesday, 8 a.m. Pacific time for Unification from New York Blockchain Week.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.